Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Today we have a familiar face, Mr. Rich Summers. I went out to San Diego to guest on his podcast recently, and so he's coming over to say hello to our followers and listeners here. Rich, how's it going?
Avery, doing really well. It's been a little bit, but doing great, and I'm super excited to be on the show. So thanks for having me on. I think you were out here in San Diego in my studio and came out to the meetup about 2 months ago, and it was yourself, and it was a good time. So it was good to see you. And
Amanda Hahn, yes.
Amanda Hahn, yes.
Yeah, I'm still paying for all the tacos that I ate. So guys, whenever I go out to California or Texas or anywhere that has good Mexican food, because Florida does not, I just completely go off the rails and overdo it. So I'm still paying for those, but it was worth every single calorie. So anyway, y'all don't care about that.
Love some good tacos at Pastor. they got some good taco shops here in San Diego, I hear.
Oh yeah.
By the way, I was on the phone with one of our investors, Crystal. Her name's Crystal, and she actually mentioned that she's bought a couple of deals through your brokerage. She invests with us, and she's like growing a co-hosting business. So shout out to Crystal. She's awesome, but she did say some great things about you, Avery.
Oh, thank you, Crystal. We love you. I have an idea of which Crystal that probably is, but I'm not going to guess on here in case I'm wrong. But thank you very much, Crystal.
Yeah. That. Of course.
So Rich, what have you been up to? I guess like the most recent thing that I knew you were up to was you were doing a new boutique hotel fund. So tell me how that deal went and what's going on with it.
Yeah. Last time I was on your show, I believe I was just launching our hotel fund. And since then, we've bought four boutique hotels, all owned by this fund. One of the deals is in San Diego, Little Italy downtown, 24 unit boutique hotel, which
cool.
We had some. Yeah. It was really cool. It was a neighborhood that I live in Little Italy. And did a full renovation. It was very tired. It was underperforming, and bought that, and did a full reno and did a grand opening, relaunched it. We did have some struggles and challenges, but that's, you know, every deal doesn't go according to plan. And sometimes you got to dig in. And that particular one, we had San Diego had record rainfall in January of this year, and a lot of buildings downtown got flooded out. My podcast studio here got flooded. Even my brand new apartment building that I live in got some water damage as well. But that said, insurance didn't cover a dime, and we had to shut down the property for like 6 weeks. And but we figured it out. We grinded, we hustled, and we figured it out. And now that property's performing. We're in summer season now. And we also picked up a few other deals. So a 40-unit boutique hotel up in Lake Chelan, Washington, that we bought directly from our bridge lender. That was a deal that they had repossessed from the initial borrower and the developer. And they sold that deal to us for a discount. And most recently, bought a 44-unit boutique hotel about 2 months ago up in Sonoma Coast, Northern California, wine country.
Oh, cool.
44 units, waterfront, near a bunch of wineries up there in Sonoma. So super excited about those four deals. We're kind of stabilizing the assets right now and taking a little pause from buying, just so we can really maximize those NOI and get ready for a nice prime refi sometime next year with all four of those deals.
Okay, I got a East Coast pocket listing for you.
Offline. Do you? Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Short Term Shop Plus. Are you looking for someone to help you analyze a deal? Do you want instant access to lectures on management and short-term rental success? Join Short Term Shop Plus for all of your vacation rental needs. STS Plus is open to the public and offered for the first time at a tremendous value. Also included is world-famous Management Monday, a weekly live session with everything you need to know about setting up your property and learning how to manage from a distance. Join today at stsplus.com. That's stsplus.com.
Anyway, so I think there, a lot of people probably have questions about like getting into the boutique hotel space. I think we talked about this a little bit when you were on last time, but let's do a little refresher. So you have some single family short-term rentals. Now you're doing boutique hotels. What made you decide to make that switch?
Yeah. So when I was buying short-term rentals, I was also investing pretty heavily in multifamily, which I know you do as well. And multifamily for me started to become a little bit oversaturated in 2021. I felt like there was just a lot of money chasing the same types of assets. And a lot of good multifamily deals that we were looking at had, you know, 35, 40 property tours and 25, 30 offers. And by the time you get to best and final, a lot of these groups were overpaying. They had aggressive assumptions. And so I thought, man, I was kind of building out a co-hosting business and I was building out a team to manage my short-term rentals. We were also managing for third-party owners. And I thought, what if we take my background in the short-term rentals and then also my background in multifamily and go after a boutique hotel? And what if we do kind of the self-check-in, self-checkout model and we take the manager's unit or the innkeeper suite and renovate that and bring that online for additional revenue, but then manage it remotely, allowing us to drop the payroll expense of having an on-site manager to the bottom line, which, you know, boutique hotels is commercial real estate. So they're valued based on the income approach. And so the more I can increase the income, the more I can decrease the expenses, the more I can force my appreciation. And so I did the first deal up in Northern California. That was Shelter Cove, 10-unit boutique hotel. Bought it from a mom and pop seller. They had owned the property for 18 years. They never exceeded $180,000 in gross revenue. And we bought that property for 1.5. They seller financed it. And 12 months into it, we renovated the property. We took the income from 180 to almost 700,000.
Whoa.
And the property appraised at 4.5. So we took it from 1.5 to 4.5 in 12 months, did a cash out refinance. And I literally tripled the value of that property in 12 months. And I said, okay, I'm going to go all in on this model. And that's kind of how the fund was created.
My goodness, that is an insane increase in 12 months. And I think you just perfectly illustrated, you know, why you might ever make the jump from a single family short-term rental to any type of commercial real estate. Because once you learn, I feel like buying a single family is a really great, like, kind of foray into the hotel space, because you learn the management, you learn the kind of ins and outs of having one unit or like one key. Mm-hmm. And then once you learn that, and unfortunately, you know, with at least the way that lending stands now with single family short-term rentals, they're still appraised as residential assets, which means it doesn't matter how much money you make in the eyes of an appraiser or a bank of a person who's buying this, it's still going to be appraised the same as the residential property next door. That's not even a rental, but it's a great way to cut your teeth, learn the business, get some cash flow going. And then if you want to get into the commercial space, you already, you know, you've got a good idea. You're not coming in just, you know, fresh off the turnip truck. You already know the ins and outs of the management, which will be a little different in a true hotel, but then you're able to take a property like what you bought. And with commercial guys, when you increase the income, the appraisal is now based on the income. So if you take something that's underperforming and increase the income, you're also increasing the equity in the property, which is what Rich just said that he did. So very, very cool. That's a really, is that normal? Is that a normal amount to be able to increase the income?
It's tough to find that that gap or that type of a delta in other asset classes right now. Certainly multifamily, it's very tough to find. But in the boutique hotel space right now, because of the fact that we have 40 million baby boomers retiring over the next 7 years, it's estimated that about 25% of the boutique hotels out there that are valued under $10 million are owned by these retiring boomers. And a lot of their properties are tired. They haven't been renovated in decades. And a lot of them are not utilizing any technology, no dynamic pricing. That one that I just alluded to, they were just relying on a direct booking website. They were not using any dynamic pricing. The managers were living on site. It was a husband and wife, and they were not just occupying one of the 10 units, they were occupying two of the 10 units, which only left 8 available to rent. And so I think right now with the boutique hotel space, because of all those retiring boomers, you can find those big deltas and you can find those deals that are severely underperforming and just coming in there and providing better marketing, putting all the rooms on all the OTAs, that alone without renovating is free to implement. And implementing dynamic pricing is free to implement. And that can create a huge value exchange. I mean, just for super simple math here for your audience. The income approach is so powerful. So let's just say, for example, we bring the manager's unit online, and often these innkeeper suites, Avery, are like the nicest units in the property. Sometimes they're two bedrooms, they got full kitchens, living rooms, etc. And so just by renovating those units and bringing them online, let's just say that we bring in another $60,000 in net income throughout the year. And let's just say the manager is making another $50,000 a year, which would drop to the bottom line. That's an extra $50,000 plus $60,000. So $110,000 increase to the NOI. And let's just say the average hotel cap rate is 8%. We just increased the value of the property by $1.3 million just by making that simple change.
That's crazy. And, you know, one thing I do want to tie back in again to single family short-term rentals is that, you know, there are a lot of boomer level mom and pop short-term rental properties out there that are just using Vrbo, that are not using dynamic pricing, that when you are looking at and analyzing and see what their income is, that, you know, as a manager who has even a slight amount of idea what you're doing, that you could increase that income. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, especially in the older vacation markets that have been around since before Airbnb. There are a lot of those about to retire boomer age hosts that are just doing everything really old school. And there's a big opportunity there. Whereas a lot of the data guys are like, oh, those markets are saturated, they don't work anymore. But a lot of the numbers that are going into these averages that show up in the data are these super low performing grandma and grandpa are running their beach house in Destin, Florida properties. And that presents a really great opportunity for you to come in and redo. You know, they've got the wicker furniture and the pink and the blue and the ugly everything. Sorry if you guys like that stuff, but you know, the Golden Girl style beach condos or mountain houses or things like that, that you could come in and, you know, relatively easily boost those things up to where they need to be. So I think, you know, the rehab and the value add is always going to be a great opportunity across any asset class, in my opinion.
Yeah. And the other cool thing is this, is I think in traditional real estate investing, Avery, multifamily, long-term rentals, I hear a lot of folks say, hey, I want to go into landlord-friendly areas, landlord-friendly states. I don't like a lot of bureaucracy and red tape. And so they're going to areas like Texas and Florida. But with the boutique hotels, we kind of think opposite. We like the areas that have a lot of bureaucracy and red tape and barriers to entry. We like regulation because those areas that are more liberal tend to have more regulation in terms of Airbnb regulations. So we actually go into areas to where we see tightening STR regulations because we know it's bringing more demand back to the boutique hotels. So for example, I own a luxury property out in Scottsdale that's an Airbnb, and it crushes, it does really well. Love the Scottsdale market for STR, but I never want to own a boutique hotel there. There's 6,000 short-term rentals in Scottsdale alone. And so I don't want to own a hotel there and have to compete with all those STRs.
Yeah, that is... That, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that does make sense. And I think same thing goes for the other way around. Like, I don't really want to own a short-term rental in a market where there's a lot of hotels that have like a lot of pull with the local government. I don't really want to try and compete with that. I like things to be easy, which is why I like the big older vacation markets when it comes to short-term rentals, because it's easy. They're established. Your vendor networks are already established. It's very easy to just plug and play and get started. And there's something that we mentioned on your podcast that I was on a few weeks ago that after I got off, I was like, man, we should have talked about that more. And so, you know, where I, like I've said, typically prefer the older vacation markets. I don't like metro markets very much, but you are investing in more short-term rentals in San Diego. And there's something that I kind of wanted to touch on there that we missed in the previous episode. And
let's circle back. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's circle back. So when you don't know where to invest, if you're like, okay, I want to be a short-term rental investor, now what the hell do I do? Start with what you know. So you are able to be successful in San Diego for short-term rentals with heavy regulation and some of the highest purchase prices in the country because you're from there and it's a market that you know and understand, so you can be successful there. So instead of, I think people get real like caught up in, oh, I got to look at this AirDNA list of best places to invest in short-term rentals. And they end up with a really weird market with a very limited type of traveler. And if one thing changes about that, or if you don't truly understand the type of person that goes to that market, like I use Starkville, Mississippi, where I'm from, as an example all the time. I don't think everybody could be successful there, but because I grew up there, there's an SEC football school there. I know exactly what type of person comes there and when and why and who they are. I could be successful there, but maybe like you might have a harder time because you have to truly take the time to understand a market. Whereas I think a lot of people just read these lists and they're like, okay, there, this place is number one on that list. I'm not going to take any time to understand the market. Let me just buy there. So what are your thoughts there?
I totally agree. I think most folks out there, you should invest where you have the competitive advantage. And the competitive advantage for most people is the market that you live in. And so not everyone lives in a market that's conducive for real estate investing. But if you do, you should probably start there. And so, you know, here in San Diego, we're in a lot of markets right now. But San Diego, we have the competitive advantage. We have great year-round weather. And so from an STR standpoint, it's not a seasonal market. The demand year-round is actually really great. You know, even when you get into the slower months, the slowest 2 months in San Diego are January, February, and they're still pretty good. But there was 16,000 short-term rentals in the city of San Diego prior to regulation. May of 2023, the city regulated and slashed the supply from 16,000 short-term rental listings to 5,500, and they issued 5,500 licenses. And there's still 800 licenses left the last time we checked. And so they slashed the supply, not a seasonal market, great year-round weather. These listings should stay full. We don't have to push and pull on them. And yes, real estate prices are more expensive out here, but we get very, very high ADRs up here in high RevPAR that more than makes up for the high prices.
Yes, you do. I stayed in one in San Diego last year with my family and the ADRs were very high. And I was not shocked because I always expect California to be more expensive than anywhere else that I go or am. But I was like, dang, this girl running this thing is probably doing pretty well.
Yeah. And then you got the ADU play out here too. So right now in San Diego, because there's a shortage of affordable housing, you can literally buy a property on a large lot and legally build one to two, sometimes even up to four ADUs in the backyard. You can legally convert a garage over to an additional unit. And so I think it's a massive opportunity right now for anyone that knows the San Diego market. You know, you come in, pick up a single family property with low to no money down, maybe you live in it for a little bit, use it as primary residence, and then get the permits to build the ADU, maybe build multiple ADUs, and then you can convert your property over to an STR, and then eventually do the build out. You got multiple streams of income on one property. You added a lot of value and appreciation through building the ADUs. Out here, you can build for about $250 to $350 a square foot. And a lot of these neighborhood comp out at, you know, $700, $800 bucks a foot. So you get to pocket on that spread, that delta. Force a lot of appreciation, do a cash out refi and roll your money into more assets. But it's a great STR market and there's still 800 licenses left. Last time we checked here in the city of San Diego, I don't know if people were sleeping behind the wheel. They don't know about it or what, but it's still a huge opportunity. And I know we're taking advantage right now.
Short-Term Shop Plus has live and recorded sessions on the following topics: creating compelling listings, marketing your STR property, setting up a new listing, managing from a distance, finding and acquiring your first or next STR, live revenue management audits with the pros, analyzing an STR for gross revenue. All of this and much, much more is now available at your fingertips with Short-Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know to have success in the world of vacation homes and STR. Please join us at stsconsultation.com. That's stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com to learn more. If you like what you're hearing, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, you can join me on a live weekly call to talk about your next short-term rental or ask questions about the one you already have. I am live once per week on Zoom. I would love to have you come and say hello. It's strquestions.com. That's strquestions.com. Come and join us.
Yeah. I mean, I think people just see that headline and they don't bother. They're like, oh, I'm not going to bother. And they don't check. And they don't realize, well, there's 800 licenses. I totally could bother and do really well. They just say, oh, San Diego is not STR friendly. Let me just look somewhere else.
Yeah. The other thing I love is this, like from a supply and demand standpoint, they say San Diego is on an island. So to the north, you got Camp Pendleton. To the west, you got the Pacific Ocean. To the south, you got the Mexican border. To the east, you got the mountain ranges. So from a supply standpoint, there's not a lot of land to build on. And so as more and more people migrate into San Diego, it's only going to push pricing further upward. On Marcus & Millichap, they put out a good multifamily forecast every year. They take the top 50 markets in the country and they rank them. And for 2024, San Diego is ranked number two in terms of multifamily forecasts by Marcus & Millichap. So that was pretty cool.
So you mentioned the values continuing to go up. And this is a question that I wanted to ask you as an experienced investor across all asset classes, long-term, short-term, whatever. What do you think is more important, cash flow or appreciation?
Oh, appreciation, without a doubt. When I first got into the game, Avery, I thought it was about the cash flow. And I was buying deals in Cincinnati and Indianapolis, and I wanted the cash flow. And, you know, I think my progression as a real estate investor has definitely shifted. I needed the cash flow to get out of my job, get out of my day job. But once I had enough cash flow to, you know, to live and support my living expenses, then I really started chasing the appreciation. And so for me now, I am purely looking for the appreciation. The cash flow is great, but you know, in this rate environment, I need two things in order to buy. I want, one, I need to be able to buy at a discount. Two, I need to be able to add tremendous value. And I think cash flow is great, it pays the bills, but in all reality, true wealth is built through appreciation.
I had a feeling you might say that. And I've recently learned that lesson myself the hard way. So we also were, and I mean, I used to be hardcore, like, you guys are so stupid talking about appreciation. That can change, you know, with an election or at the drop of a hat. Y'all are so dumb. It has to be cash flow. And I would get in arguments with people on Bigger Pockets about that. And for a while, I like beat that drum really hard. Well, we did the same thing. Have an apartment building or a couple apartment buildings in the Midwest, which historically, guys, does not appreciate or depreciate. It just kind of stays flat. And the problem that we ran into is there's a big apartment building across the street from one of ours. And ours was totally fine when we bought it. It was like a C plus, getting it to a B minus. And there's a big building across the street. And that owner has let it fall into such disrepair and badly screened tenants that it is now condemned by the city. So there's a lot of crime over there, which is now bleeding over across the street to us. Our good tenants are not renewing leases because of that. We've got people breaking in to the units that we are rehabbing to be able to give people nicer places to live. And then we end up having to rehab them. And so, you know, this has been going on for a year or two, and we told ourselves, no, we'll hold on, we'll hold on, we'll get past it. And finally, we're like, okay, this is enough. Enough is enough. And the police just don't really care about it. You know, better things to do, whatever. So we're finally deciding to sell. Well, because we invested purely for cash flow, and there's only so much that, you know, yes, we were renovating units, but now that we have this piece of garbage across the street, what we're running into is we're going to be selling for a loss. And it's fine with us just to get it off of our plate. But had we invested in an area that appreciated really at all, because we've owned this thing for about 4 years now, so we could have in another area, we'd have a little bit of a bump at least. And it hasn't. It's exactly the same. And we were planning to hold it forever. So we were okay with that because we were cash flow buyers. But now we're kind of learning, oh man, it would have been nice if this is something that would have appreciated even a little bit so that we could not have to take as big of a loss. Because now we've got just the real estate value that's the same. But once you pay your agents, and then we've done a lot of rehabs and having to re-rehab it. So I learned the hard way why. Took my medicine. Everyone who ever argued with me on Bigger Pockets, you were right. that investing for cash flow is not always smart.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we only have the capacity to do so many deals. So, you know, for me, looking at the time it takes to source a deal, get a deal debted up, get it to the finish line, manage contractors, renovate these properties, all the risks that you inherit by taking on a project like that, the time, from a time standpoint, It's relatively the same amount of time and cost to do a project in the Midwest, in an area like Oklahoma City, just for example, versus a high growth market like Scottsdale, Arizona, or Santa Barbara, California, San Diego, et cetera. But I know I'm going to add a lot more appreciation and equity growth in a high growth market like San Diego or Santa Barbara. So why not just do that same deal in a high growth market and really capture a lot more on the upside? So that's kind of like the progression that I've kind of transition through as a real estate investor. I mean, I was buying, and I still own a lot of these deals in Cincinnati and Indianapolis. And I did do good on those markets, but I just know those deals are never going to be worth, you know, tens of millions of dollars. They just aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally, totally agree with that. And from now on, my strategy is the worst property in the best location in the best growing markets, like you said. So for long terms, I want markets that are job growth and desirable areas that people actually want to live. Like people, no offense to anyone in the Midwest. My husband is Midwestern and he's wonderful, but you know, these aren't areas that a lot of people are moving to. So for me, I'm sticking now to, if it's long-term, areas that a lot of people are moving to. If it's short-term, I want areas with proven decades of tourism. I don't want new. I don't want, nobody's talking about this market. Forget that. I don't want that, because that can change. And if it's not a desirable area, then you're not going to appreciate. And that is much more important than I thought it was at the time. So lesson learned for me.
Yeah. My strategies are really very similar today. So it's really three things. It's one, I need to be able to buy at a discount. I think paying retail right now in a declining market is not ideal. And then two, I need a clear path to add a lot of value. So I want to add a lot of value so I can create a lot of equity growth. That gives me a margin buffer cushion for air should the market continue to soften before it improves again. And then third, I need to buy a good location. So I like beachfront locations, areas that are going to appreciate in great areas. I don't want to buy a deal that's surrounded by liquor stores, gun stores, pawn shops, et cetera. I want to be in prime locations. So I think if you can stick to those three things, you'll do really good. And I think this market, and we see prices and all that sort of thing, I believe we're going to see a lot of appreciation and growth over the next 5 to 7 years. I mean, you got to think the Federal Reserve, Avery, printed 80% of the money supply over the last 4 years. A lot of that money is on the sidelines right now because of the rate environment. A lot of that mm-hmm. money is sitting in bonds and a lot of other assets. But when the rates go back down, a lot of that money is going to enter the market again. And I think that's where we're going to see a lot of rent growth. We're going to see a lot of ADR growth. We're going to see a lot of appreciation across mm-hmm. a lot of these hard assets out there, real estate especially.
I 100% agree with that. We get a lot of clients coming in, but we have more often than not, I'm going to wait and see what happens. And these are not clients that are pressed for cash in any kind of way. A lot of them are cash buyers ready to go, but they're just like, hey, you know what? I'm waiting to see what happens, So I think that there's a lot of pent-up demand that's just waiting for something to move. And I think that when that thing does move, whether it's prices or interest rates, I think it's more likely to be interest rates than prices, that everybody's going to come flooding back in. And so what would you say for our listeners who are like, okay, I'm really motivated. These two have been like talking about, I'm going to go do a rehab property, but I don't know where. So A, how would you advise them on finding a market, and B, how would you advise them on finding those value add properties?
Yeah. And so real quick, just to close the loop on what we just talked about is, you know, it's important to remember, if you're on the sideline right now, look at where the rate environment was 2.5 years ago. And had you told any real estate investor, Avery or myself, 2.5 years ago, hey, the rates are going to more than double for 30 months. And most real estate markets around the country are going to be relatively untouched in terms of pricing, we would have all thought you were crazy. But the fact that the rates have more than doubled for 30 months in most real estate markets, the pricing has really relatively been untouched, which mm-hmm. is a true testament to how strong the supply and demand fundamentals really are across real estate, across all these markets for housing. So you got shifting demographics. The baby boomers are living a lot longer. They're not selling their homes. And then you got the millennials that are buying their first homes. They're starting families for the first time. And then you got the Gen Zers that are even bigger. They're moving out of their parents' house for the first time. They're looking to rent apartments and that sort of thing. And then from a supply standpoint, we had 2020 COVID, a lot of new builds slowed down. And then right now we're in a high rate environment. So the cost to build has gone up. A lot of builders are on the sidelines. And so I've read multiple articles out there that say we're anywhere from 5 to 6 million housing units short to where the demand is. And this is not including the 30 million dilapidated homes that are out there in America that are not rentable, they're not livable, and you can't even get loans on them. And so if you think about it from that standpoint, there is such a huge shortage of housing across America, which is why I believe as soon as these rates go back down, we're going to see another bull run. And I don't know when the rates will go back down. I've heard, you know, the Fed came out recently and said they're going to do 8 consecutive rate cuts starting in September. I would be shocked if that actually happens, but we'll see. But to circle back to your other question, so you said what market, you know, investors should go in and how do they find the right value add properties? I think start in your own market. If you live in a market that's conducive for real estate investing, that's likely where you're going to have the competitive advantage. It's a lot easier to manage your manage contractors, manage the property managers, all that sort of thing in your local market. If not, go out and find other local markets in the area or expand out. You know, if you live in Oklahoma City and you want to go into a high growth market, go study some high growth markets and get clear on exactly what asset you want to go into. So if it's short term rental investing or you want to get into boutique hotels, get clear on what it is that you want to buy and then go do some market research. You know, if you want to buy boutique hotels, probably go into more liberal areas with tightening Airbnb regulations because that's going to bring more demand to the boutique hotel. But if you want to go into a good STR market, probably use some of the principles that Avery teaches. So that's number one. And then number two, how do you find the properties with value add components? Most of these boutique hotels are traded through brokers. So it's all a relationship game. So you want to build the relationships with the brokers in the markets you want to be at, become friends with those brokers, and you want to always be talking to them and know your search criteria. So when you get on the phone with these brokers, you only have 30 seconds to kind of prove that you have the ability to close a deal. You have the ability to get a commercial deal to the finish line because they want to know, are you real? And are they going to get paid? And so a lot of it is knowing your search criteria. So for us, we're looking for deals 2 to 10 million in price. We like steep value add deals. We like areas in great locations with clear paths to add a lot of value. We like seller financing opportunities. Right now, we're in a high rate environment. And a lot of these mom and pop sellers are retiring. And so they don't need all the sale proceeds. They would actually prefer the cash flow ongoing. It reduces their tax burden and allows us to get in with more appealing financing terms. And so that's really our search criteria right now. And so I would say, get clear with the brokers, build the relationships and let them know what you're looking for and they'll bring in the deals.
Really good advice. And that is true. You know, the brokers that do the most business are going to be the ones that have the most deals in their back pocket. And I think that that's really important to remember that a lot of times newer brokers are really, they'll love bomb you to get your business, yeah, which is great, but they don't have the reach that the bigger brokers who have been in business, doing a lot of business for a long time are going to have.
Yeah. It's like the 90-10 rule with brokers and with lenders. I would say, 10% of the brokers out there do 90% of the transactions. Right. And the other 90% of the brokers out there compete for the remaining 10% of the transactions. Same thing as with the lenders. And we call these people gamers. Avery, you're like, hey, mm-hmm. We got gamers out there, people that can problem solve. They know how to get deals to the finish line. They know how to, navigate certain challenges or road bumps that pop up, because let's be honest, every single deal has challenges. And some lenders are gamers, some brokers are gamers, some are not. And so if you're out there and you don't have a good lender, well, you need to go shake some more hands. You need to go meet some more lenders because they are out there. And this is a relationship game. So I always say, if you're not buying the deals you want to be buying, you're not making the kind of money you want to be buying or making, it's simply because you're not shaking enough hands. And you got to get out there, go shake more hands, go to conferences, go to networking events. Maybe you start your own networking event, that sort of thing. But you got to get out there and make it happen because deals are out there. You just got to find them. And it's a relationship-based game. I mean, one of the last deals we bought, we have a really good relationship with our bridge lender. They financed 3 of the last deals. They sold us a repossessed deal and gave us 0% financing to start with out the gate because we had that relationship. So get out there and shake some hands and make it happen. The gamers are out there, Avery.
Yep. Networking is everything in real estate. I actually hate that word because it feels so fake and I don't like being networked, because when I feel like I'm being networked, I can feel the person I'm talking to, like at a conference or something, looking over my shoulder for somebody more important to walk by. So be genuine. Go make friends. Go be cool to people. Be real.
Yeah. And when you go to these networking events or like meetups, like, don't be the person that brings 50 business cards and just throws them out. There are people that come to these meetups and do that. I'm like, it's such a turnoff. But go to these networking events and genuinely build a relationship or two with a couple people there. And if you can just do that every time you go to a meetup and genuinely build a relationship organically with people that you want to network with, and be selective, right? Because not everyone in a meetup is going to be conducive with your path. And so be selective with who you want to network with and build that relationship.
Totally agree with that. Well, Rich, we're coming to the end of the show where we ask everybody the same three questions. You have answered these before, but I think it's been a year or two, so you're going to answer them again, maybe differently.
Yeah, I'm sure my answers will be different.
So what advice would you have given 20-year-old Rich?
I would have said, get around people that are where you want to be in life, and start learning the game of real estate investing early and entrepreneurship early. I didn't learn anything about real estate investing or entrepreneurship until age 33. I was an 11-year government employee as an air traffic controller. And one day I just woke up. I was stuck. I wasn't growing. And I just woke up and I overheard a coworker talking about how he just closed on a fourplex in Cleveland. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I was like, how did you do that? And so I learned this game at 33. I felt like I was old to be getting started. Now I'm 38, going to be 39 next month. And I feel like I'm just getting warmed up. It's like, this is just the beginning. And I'm obsessed with this game. And so I would have told myself to get into the game earlier, get around people that are making moves. And then lastly, I'll say this. I think a lot of people say the end game. And I used to think this was the end game for me. The end game is to retire and sit on the beach and do nothing. But the end game for me now at age 38 is to continue playing the game. I'm obsessed and I want to keep playing the game over and over and over. And happiness stems from growth and progress. I'm addicted to the growth and I'm addicted to the progress. That's what makes me happy.
All right. And second question, what advice would you give a new investor who's getting started today?
I would say, don't get into analysis paralysis. You got to take action. A lot of people I talk to say, oh, I want to buy a real estate deal. And what kind of books can you recommend? I'm like, hey, go read this book. Go check out this podcast. And I'll give some suggestions. And then 12 months later, I see them and I'm like, hey, what's up? They're like, oh, life got busy. Or my wife talked me out of this. Or my parents talked me out of doing it. I'm like, no. You gotta get clear on what you want, and you gotta take action. This game is all about taking action. That first deal is not gonna be a home run. That's not the point of the first deal. You can't be afraid to make a mistake. Mistakes are gonna happen. Every single deal has tons of mistakes. We're making mistakes every single week, but we learn from them. And that's what ultimately gives us the confidence to buy more and more deals. And so if you don't have the confidence, go give yourself a reason to have confidence. Action leads to competency. Competency leads to confidence. So go out there and buy that first deal. Don't be afraid to do it.
All right. And last, what is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Mindset. Ooh, there's so many freaking good books out there. There really are. I would say my favorite book that I'm kind of reading right now, I just kind of finished, is Your Next Five Moves by Patrick Bet-David. A lot of it is mindsets and how to continue growing and leveling up and build out your business. And there's a lot of really, really good life lessons in that book. So I would say Your Next Five Moves by Patrick Bet-David, PBD. I'm a big fan of him.
All right. Great recommendation. And last but certainly not least, if our listeners want to follow you or get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah. So everything's on my Instagram at rich_Summers. That's SOMERS. If you're interested in boutique hotel investing, we do have a really cool boutique hotel mastermind. You can go to hotelinvesting.com to learn more about that. And yeah, I got a podcast that Avery's been on, the Rich Summers Report. And that's it.
All right. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. Really cool to hear what you've been up to lately. And we will catch you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks a lot.
Avery, appreciate you having me on. I'm a big fan, and keep crushing, keep inspiring.